Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And also you can access this radio show through our podcast on KXORadio.com. So welcome, everyone.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
So you did the dramatic pause before the four on the phone number. I thought you were going to do like KXORadio.com.
I should have.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. Welcome. Got our show for you. Let's jump right in. We got Mariana Vialas, and she is the lead advocate for the rape prevention for the SURE helpline people. Good morning, Mariana.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show again.
It's good to have you again. You have a lot of good information, and as this whole radio show is to provide awareness and information to our community. And SURE helpline has a lot of information.
Yes, we do.
And they've been around for a while.
Since 1971. Yes, we have.
So it's 1 year old.
Yes. So it's been out for a couple of years now. So we are very proud to know that it's growing and it's advancing. So we're here to help. So let's go on.
And it's good that you're still around with the way the economy is.
Yes.
Because your organization relies on
a lot of wood.
I know. Well, I mean, they need to know it's good. You know, it relies on funding. You know,
yes.
Just
nonprofit organization.
Nonprofit organization.
We're always taking donations, so it's something you know for us to keep going. And you know, the main thing is that we're here to help people. We like to help people. You know, give the services. A lot of people doesn't believe that you know this Bali needs certain services, but you know, as long as we have at least 4 or 5 people that need our services, we're gonna keep moving. So.
Sure, Helpline has a long history. I mean, it's been around something like 20 years now, at least.
A little bit more. It's since 1971. 71. Over 37 years.
No, yes. 39 years. Cause
this is 40th year, I was going to say. I'm doing the math.
Yes. So.
Great. Okay. So, you know, let's talk about rape prevention because that's... Where do you guys start when you're trying to help a community avoid sexual victimization crime?
Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit first about the program that we have at SURE Helpline Crisis Center.
Sure.
SURE Helpline Crisis Center has a special program called SART, and for those who don't know who SART is, it's the Sexual Assault Response Team. Sexual Assault Response Team is composed of 4 elements, which we have the victim, we have the law enforcement, we have the nurse practitioner, and we also have the advocates, which is us. Every component has a different ways of operating. You know, the victim, it's, you know, our main purpose. Without a victim, the team doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So the law enforcement is in charge of, you know, getting all of the facts together. And actually, those are the ones that are going to say yes or no, we're going to activate SART. Mm-hmm. Then the process continues on with the nurse examiner. The next examiner will be in charge of collecting evidence, seal all the evidence, and hand it out to you know, the district attorney. And the advocate is, I provide the emotional support, the accompaniment, and the advocacy to victims of sexual assault. So this program, it's, like I said, it's funded by different grants that we have by the state of California and also by donations. So it's, everybody's welcome to bring donations, and we're more than welcome to receive them.
That whole process for the victim is very traumatic.
Very, very traumatic. Actually, one of the things that, you know, victims have, and it's very distinctive, though, is they usually blame themselves. Usually the first response is to blame themselves and to say, you know, it's my fault. So that's why most of the times they don't report it, especially if they're teenagers. They're usually a little bit more skeptical as to report.
Do we know how many rapes are committed versus reported? Is there some sort of...
It varies. You know, we are becoming to have those... but they said that 1 in 4 women actually are raped.
We know our court system doesn't have that many cases pending.
No, so. But it's because it's underreported.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. I mean, the numbers vary, but it's because it's underreported. It happens sometimes they actually get raped and they don't disclose it after probably 3 months, 4 months after, if we are lucky.
In many cases, it the women that get raped are in relationships.
And
the perpetrator is the boyfriend or even their spouse.
Their spouse. And that's it's very important. I mean, most people believe that people who are raped by a stranger, but actually, you know, 90% of the rapes are by somebody who you actually know, which is, you know, the acquaintance rape. And acquaintance rape can be anybody that you know, the neighbor, the person at the grocery store, and usually sometimes, you know, the significant other. With marital rape, what happens is that most victims don't believe it's rape because, you know, since they're married, they don't believe.
Hey, that doesn't give you the right.
Exactly. But most victims, especially from different backgrounds.
Cultural backgrounds,
they believe, you know, that that's kind of like their wifely duty just to, you know, have sex with a husband at their, you know, at their request. So it's very important for them to know that the moment that you said no, it becomes rape, even if you're married to the perpetrator. So.
And I think that's one thing that a lot of women
don't realize.
Yeah, don't realize.
Yeah, it's like
how often is something like that even reported? I mean,
for your
SART team, how often is it marital rape? I bet you virtually never.
Never. Cause, you know, I probably have a couple of cases, and those are cases that have been reported from domestic violence. And when, you know, they disclose that information to Center for Family Solutions, and then they send them to us, you know, she said that she has been raped, but she doesn't see it as raped. So we're trying to make them understand that, you know, the moment that you say no, even if you don't want to, even if it's your husband, you know, it's right. So, yes, it's underreported.
So virtually none of those. But if you think about it, if you do the math in your head, if you think about non-consensual marital sex.
Non-consensual. Mm-hmm.
That's probably pretty, you know, that's out of all the types of non-consensual sex, that's probably way up there because there's more marital sex than any other.
Can you imagine,
sex,
for example, being raped by somebody that you know, but stranger, I mean, it's kind of a taboo. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to actually go and get in front of people and say, I was raped.
Mm-hmm.
And now, can you imagine by saying, you know what, I was raped by somebody that actually loves me and takes, you know, care of
supposedly.
Myself. Supposedly cares for me. And like I said, it's not so much that they're ashamed. It's just sometimes they don't see it as rape because you are married or you're in a relationship with that
person. Well, and it may take different forms in terms of violence and coercion and all the other aspects that make non-consensual sex rape.
But then, you know, it also makes it difficult when, you know, there's a, like, for example, if they're married and they're going through a divorce and, you know, the wife says, you know, accuses the man of rape, you know, just,
yeah,
I mean, it's just, it's hard, it's hard. I think the victim sometimes becomes the even more victimized because they don't believe or.
And we see that a lot with victims, like I mentioned before, of domestic violence. You know, they're pretty much separated, and you know that's actually a way of gaining back power and control. Most people believe that rape is something that has to do with sex, but rape has something to do with power and control. It's nothing else. I mean, what can be more humiliating than to take away a piece of your soul? How can I take a piece of your soul by taking something that is so intimate, something that it's, you know, that it belongs to you? And if I take that away from you, I'm taking your power. I'm taking your willingness to, you know, pretty much open up your soul. So rape is nothing but power and control.
It doesn't always happen towards women.
No. And that's also very important. Thank you for mentioning that. It also happens to men. And it can be in a relationship with, you know, it's men and women and also men to men or women to women. I mean, it can be variations of stuff. But it's just, you know, we live in a society where we just think, you know, rape happens to women by men. So now we've seen also, incidents of men have been raped, especially in prison. But, of course, because they're in prison, we just don't hear those things. But, you know, those are, you know, people who are very, very vulnerable to become victims of rape.
And that's probably even less reported.
Oh, that's just 1% of, you know, people, you know, in all the years that I have been here, I probably have 2 cases of people and the prison. And like I said, it's a crime that it's underreported. And because, you know, they're prisoners or, you know, inmates, they just don't report that. So they become double victimized.
And outside of the prison, have you, as the SART sexual response team, ever had to support men? I mean, is that so occasionally or rarely? Or?
Yes. Well, when SART gets activated and we have to attend to those cases, yes. You know, we're not afraid to show up. I have instances where I have to show up with, you know, men. And that's okay. And that's why I'm also inviting every male you know, to come forward and to take our training. So we need men. Sometimes males can be feel a little bit intimidated by women, but sometimes they can feel a little bit more comfortable with women. We don't know. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. But we're still inviting everybody to come to our office and, you know, see if they can want to take the training for all those men out there so they can help out and help us be a voice against mm-hmm. rape.
When is the training scheduled? Or because you mentioned
you can call the office at 352-7878 so that we can have something. We're putting something together, so we start. You know, we're in the process of getting something together for everybody. So you guys can call the office and we can give that information out to you.
Another question. No, well, because you're putting on these trainings, and one of the important things, and sometimes besides getting the person, the victim, calling you first, they also call 911.
Mm-hmm. They usually call 911.
Are the are police officers trained in SART, or are
yes.
they have any? Because that's so important, especially when the victim feels vulnerable and here comes
everybody has a
police officer.
Yes, everybody has a different protocol, and actually what I do too is, you know, law enforcement has been trained on that protocol that we need to follow. So law enforcement also, you know what to do in cases of SART disactivated. Also, it's very important to know that most victims are transported to Pioneers Memorial Hospital because it's the only hospital that has all the equipment. It has all of the nurses trained for the sexual assault forensic examination.
So we think, though, that probably sexual assault, non-consensual sex, rape, is underreported, partly because the people who have been victimized don't want to go through some sort of humiliating, degrading, do you believe me type of process.
Yes.
You've set up this sexual assault response team to mitigate a lot of those factors, I would assume.
Oh, yes. And like I said, we're pretty much qualified to minimize the stress levels. We minimize everything that has to do with getting it out in public, confidentiality, pretty much everything that we have to do to make sure that the victim is going to be well taken care of. As far as confidentiality, as far as, you know, getting the person the right services that they are entitled to, SART is one of the, you know, that's why it's... And SART, for the SART room, for those of you that doesn't mm-hmm. know about the SART room, it's outside the hospital. It's a very private room. So victims actually don't go to the emergency room. They are transported directly to the SART room. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, they have some injuries that need to take care they take care of. Other than that, they transport it to Pioneers. And like I said, it's a nice room, and they're in the process of kind of remodeling that mm-hmm. room because it's getting old. So for anybody that wants to donate for this cause, you know, you guys are welcome to donate. And, you know, that's just to provide better services for the victims of sexual assault.
Is the SART team activated in every sexual assault reported, or which types of sexual assaults that are reported activate?
Mm-hmm. It depends on the victim. It depends on the victim.
If she wants to report
If she wants to report it. If they want to go through the whole process.
But if you've called the police, then you've reported it. I mean,
yeah, you reported, but, I mean, you can report the case. However, you cannot have the services provided, like, for example, the medical examination.
So if I'm a sexual assault victim, let me kind of get this straight mm-hmm. in my head. If I'm a sexual assault victim and I've been raped, and I call the police and say, I've been raped. The police come over, and then at some point I make a decision about whether to proceed or...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you want to go and examine.
And even though, I mean, if you want to report it and they don't get the exam, you still have the right, you know, on the Penal Code 1032, they said that the victim has the right to refuse an exam or to refuse to actually report. They might just want to do the perpetrator, but they're not required to actually...
There's a real point of engagement and advocacy right at the beginning of
yes.
this process, because, you know, the look on the person's face when they walk into the room, the reporting officer, whoever it is, may play out like how that, I mean, because that person may already be doubt, may already be scared, may already be being squashed by stigma. And, in you know, the person walks in the door and they got to look at face on the face like, oh, here we go, another victim, or whatever that look is that triggers that person. They're going to shut down right there and they say, you know what, I've already getting negative vibes here. I am not going to continue.
Exactly.
How do you create an environment where people get the type of care that they're really entitled to as citizens.
Well, that's why it's very important for us to go to the law enforcement and advise them that it's very important for them to call us as soon as they receive a call of a sexual assault or rape, for us to call us. Why? Because sometimes victims, they feel very intimidated either by the male, just by the male itself, and of course, you know, everybody feels intimidated by somebody in a uniform. When they call us, you know, we can provide that kind of easy. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and advocate for that person. I'm going to make sure that explain the process to that person. I'm going to make sure I'm here for you. I'm here to provide emotional support. You know, this is what you need to do. This is what you can do. These are your options. Let that person know that they don't have to do anything they don't want to, but, you know, there are services provided to them. So.
And I think it makes it also difficult is that women who are raped and are sexually assaulted, you know, afraid of calling or just because there's so many that are not, you know, they make it up. It's not true. Mm-hmm. So it really affects the ones that are being sexually assaulted and raped for those that, you know, that's why sometimes the police officer or, you know, you have that, I'm afraid of calling because they're not going to believe me.
Exactly.
Because there's been so many other ones that
they lied.
Yeah. So it really affects the person, you know.
And that's why the advocates take a very important role, because that's why we're there since the beginning, to let them know, you know what, you're not the only one, it is not your fault. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing for us is sometimes to make them believe that it's not their fault. And that whatever they did,
and to encourage them.
And to encourage them, yes. It's one of the hardest things, because even though they, you know, they know in the back of their head, you know, it's not their fault, they're saying, well, I could have not gone out late. I could have not probably wore that little skirt, and I probably not drank so much, you know. They start getting all these doubts in their heads and say, well, it was probably my fault, so they're not going to believe me or say. But, you know, my job as an advocate is to advise a person that it's not their fault and they need to take care of themselves as well as mentally and physically.
We're here with Mariana Vialas, who's the lead advocate, if you couldn't tell already by listening,
the
lead advocate of rape prevention for the SURE Helpline. Mariana, do we have data on false claims of sexual assault versus real claims? I mean, I could see that being kind of like an urban legend where you know, there's kind of this, well, there's lots of false reports, but I don't know. Is that true?
Yeah, once in a while we have those, you know, cold wolves once in a while. But most of the times people, they actually report they have been raped. Like I said, as it is, it's underreported because most people don't want to report it. So versus those, you know, we have those weird cases, like 1 in 100 cases. So, you know, it's not very common for somebody to say that actually was raped and then they found out they weren't raped. So as far as numbers, you know, I don't have an exact number for you, but we have those weird incidents.
We know that it may occur. But
It might occur, but they're very slightly.
Given the hassle that the victim has to go, I mean, you've done a lot to take away the hassle. In spite of that, it's a hassle.
Yes.
Because you've got this medical examination process. You've got this evidentiary process. You've got the legal court process.
And that's why most of the time, you know, the victim is interviewed. In this case, we want to call them survivors because, if you know, they're survived. We want to make sure that they are interviewed first and, you know, they will take a decision whether or not, you know, based on the facts, based on, you know, all kinds of things, I would say, you know what, it doesn't seem like it actually happens. My job, it's not to judge. My job is not to say it didn't happen to you. My job is to be there with the victim regardless of the situation, because we never know. We have instances where they actually had consensual sex before and then right after, you know, they were raped. So it becomes a situation where, well, yeah, she wanted first, but then, you know, she refused, you know, how can this be? So that's why it's very important to understand that the moment a person says no, it becomes rape. So that's one of the...
The N word. The no.
The no. Yes. The big N. N-O. Remember, without consent is rape.
Now, for the times that the sexual assault response team is activated, out of those, do you track how many of those activations result in charges, and then how many of those charges result in convictions?
Yes, we do.
How do you guys do?
Well, most of the information that we have is confidential as far as...
Oh, yeah, I don't want names.
Yes, we do. Like I said, the district attorney, you know, they have to take the case, you know, but I will say at least 50% of the cases will actually go to court. If they actually will be prosecuted or will actually be in a conviction, you know, that's another story. But most of the cases will actually go to court.
When you engage with survivors, are people who have experienced sexual assault, allegedly experienced sexual assault. 50% of those cases that you engage with actually do make it into the legal system.
Yes, into the legal system.
That's pretty impressive.
And, yes, and actually, it's you know, everybody gets into the legal system since the beginning, but as far as, mm-hmm. you know, actually a conviction and actually, you know, having somebody behind bars, you know, that's when the 50% comes. But before that, you know, pretty much everybody becomes into the legal system.
If the district attorney decides, looks at the case and decides, yes, to move on forward, then it's also the victim or the survivor mm-hmm. might just decide, you know what, I don't want to be in stand.
They have to understand that sometimes it's not because they're lying. Sometimes the process can take years,
yes.
can take months, can take years. And for a victim, you know, that takes a long mm-hmm. process. Victim, as it is already, they want justice right away. And that's one of the things that I have to explain to them. It's a process. You know, you're not going to get justice right away, but we're here to provide you mm-hmm. with emotional support. And that's why sometimes, you know, the legal system doesn't cooperate very much. I would like to see that the legal system, you know, gets on it and make sure they take care of these cases as a priority, you know, versus something else. So, I would like to see that, but, you know, that's, you know, we have to go through what the legal system is. And one of the things that the victims will say, well, what's the point of me actually reporting it if it's not going to go to trial, if it's not going to, and I say, mm-hmm. well, you know, do it for yourself. Do it to take care of yourself, because I can guarantee you that in the long run, something might trigger this, you know, if you don't take care of yourself emotionally and physically, you know, physically, you can get pregnant. STIs, sexually mm-hmm. transmitted
infections.
Provided
you're a woman.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, or to men too. But, you know, we have to tell them that and say, you know, do it for you because, you know, that's the right thing to do. You know, that say, you know, your silence is their power. They can mm-hmm. do it to somebody else. So once you talk to the victim and you make them realize and they say, you know, that is true. Even if it doesn't go court, I'm doing it for myself because it's the right thing to do.
Very good. Okay, this is Let's Talk About It. We're going to take a break. It's the top of the hour. We'll come back with more with Mariana Vialas after the break.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUPO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio for Imperial and Mexicali Valleys. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUPO 88.7, and our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And, of course, you can catch the podcast on KXLRadio.com. We're back with Mariana Vialas, and she is the lead advocate, rape prevention person for Sure Helpline, and regular guest, regular contributing member to the Let's Talk About
and
It.
And it's the only one here in the Valley, correct?
Yes. The Sure Helpline Crisis Center is the only rape crisis center in the whole Imperial Valley. So we'll also be very proud for that. We're the only ones who respond to all of the assaults.
That's important. If you guys wouldn't be here, where could people call, you know, just have an advocate, just having somebody with them through the whole procedure?
And that's why it's important for the Valley to know that we're here to offer services, because a majority of people doesn't know that these services exist, so they don't know, you know, who to call. So that's why we have to do more prevention, more education, so they can know that the services are here for them. Like I said, even if we have those five people that are actually calling for that, so we're still going to be here because, you know, we can guarantee those services are going to be provided. So we encourage everybody, even if it's something that happened years ago, I mean, call the office. Call us and let us know. We can still provide support groups. And we're going to be holding support groups every first Tuesday of every mm-hmm. month for 6:30 to 7:30. And that's going to be at the Sure Helpline Crisis Center, and that's going to be in English. And for people who speak Spanish, they're going to be on every first Thursday of every month from 6:30 to 7:30.
And these are for survivors?
For survivors. I mean, everybody is welcome to come and, you know, share their feelings, share everything. Everything is confidential, and, you know, it's free of charge. So everybody's welcome to come.
I think that's very important, especially with when somebody has been sexually assaulted, they feel alone.
They feel alone. They feel that, you know, their world just, you know, come to pieces. And sometimes they learn to live with that and they say, well, you know, I learned to live with that trauma and, you know, it doesn't affect me. And I say, whoa, it does affect you. And then I start asking you questions, you know, did you have, you know, a regular relationship with, you know, with men? I mean, well, sometimes I don't, you know, I don't trust men. See, it's already affecting you. You know, it might not affect you right away because sometimes we said, okay, I can put it in the back of my head and I can tough it up, you know, I can go on with my life. But in the long run, it can just, you know, come and hit you 10 times worse. So that's why it's very important for them to report it and to get the psychological help and the emotional support that they need.
Do you get a lot of phone calls from people who call your helpline prior to engaging the legal system to kind of check their options? Or
Yes, we do. And that's one of the safest way for them to go is to call us first and to see where they stand. What can they do?
Yeah, because if they call the police and 911, they know who it is.
Exactly, they know who it is. And with that, since they know it's confidential, they are more free to ask questions. They, you know, they feel a little bit more confident because we don't see them, we don't know who they are. And that's what we want. You know, we want them to open up. We want them to come forward with their problems. We want them to, at that moment, we don't want them so much to report, but we can engage them into getting them the right help. After we, you know, talk to them for a while and then we can, you know, establish some sort of, you know, relationship, then we can say, you know, it's time for you to report. It will also see, you know, how many hours or how many days mm-hmm. have passed for them to actually activities are. But if not, we can still provide the emotional support. We can still provide the support groups. We can still provide them with a lot of services for them.
From a legal standpoint, the sooner reported, the better?
The sooner, the better. They have up to 92 hours to report. And remember, but the sooner, the better. After, you know, 72 hours, a lot of evidence can be lost. But like I said, they still have 92 hours to report and to still collect evidence, you know, especially if they haven't taken a shower or if still haven't, and, you know, That's one of the things we'll also encourage, you know, report.
So the medical lab you have must be fairly sophisticated. I mean, gathering DNA and other types of
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Huh? And that's why I said Pioneers Memorial Hospital, it's equipped with all kinds, you know, of nice little gadgets that they have in order for them to have a successful forensic examination. And, you know, and they collect all the evidence. Those are the ones who are equipped.
For those that do get sexually assaulted, and do you also offer support? You know, especially you mentioned it earlier, they might get an STI or they might get pregnant. Do you offer also support, especially if they end up getting pregnant?
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the purposes or in the goals of having them to get to the whole SART examination, because the nurse will provide them with the Plan B. You know, mm-hmm. if it's reported within the 72
what
hours.
What is the Plan B?
The Plan B is the emergency contraceptive. And it's, you know, it's a pill that is given, so, you know, it will stop the pregnancy. And it's not an abortion pill. It's just to make sure, you know, they don't get pregnant. So when they report that kind of incident, you know, one of the main...
Whoever named that was, like, completely good marketer.
The Plan B.
Plan B.
Well, which one is the Plan B?
I know.
But yeah.
Not to have. And not be sexually assaulted.
Exactly.
Or not. Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, and the other thing is they will give them some medication for them to prevent having any kind. Of course, we have to keep have a follow-up to the clinic or to the doctor to make sure, you know, that there's no other sexually transmitted diseases that are going to be well-developed. But, you know, one of the main goals is to actually provide them with the services. We ask them, you know, you're going to be provided with a Plan B and you're going to be provided with some medication to prevent STIs. So this is also, you know, very good part of the system, of the SART team.
When let's say, a minor calls, does that change anything in the way how you handle that call?
Not really. And when we talk about minors, for us, we can take calls from 14 and over, and they're still under the confidentiality, and they don't have to notify their parents of sexual assault. We'll notify the parents only if the attack, you know, has further consequences, which is their life, it's, you know, in a threatened situation. But other than that they are protected, you know, under the SART, you know, the legal system, 14 and over. For those who are 14 and under, they're by another, but the CAR, which is the Child Abuse Response Team. They take care of that because these kids are taken to San Diego Hospital for examination. So we don't take cases under 14.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about sexual assault, rape, when we talk about non-consensual sex, you know, we've kind of been talking about it in this kind of, I don't know, vaginal intercourse kind of way. What is the full range of behaviors that could or would be reported? I mean, it really, people need to be aware that it's not just straight sex.
Yes, and for rape, there's two definitions, mm-hmm. the rape and the sexual assault. For the rape, it's unwanted, you know, pretty much forceful sexual intercourse. Either it can be with, you know, with a genital or fingers or a foreign object. Mm-hmm. For sexual assault, it can be more or less, you know, just pretty much touching, kissing, you know, unwanted sexual touch. But see, a lot of people say, well, if I didn't, you know, have intercourse with that person, you know, I didn't do anything.
Less evidence. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Less evidence, or, you know, I just, you know, penetrated with my fingers, or I penetrated with a foreign object. Therefore, it's not so much rape or, you know, stuff, but, you know, they're wrong. You know, it can be with a foreign object, it can be with, you know, pretty much anything. It can still be prosecuted as rape.
Do you make presentations at high schools regarding, you know,
Yes, we do. We
the rape prevention.
A lot of rape prevention. And this is to make sure that, you know, for teenagers, we have to let them know what are the, you know, how can they do to protect themselves, to be victimized. Mm-hmm. Teenagers are very vulnerable, you know, in as far as, you know, they trust pretty much everybody, especially if they're in a group.
Is there a particular age group that's more at risk of sexual assault, or is it any age, any person,
it's
anybody?
Anybody, but we see more instances, you know, of people by the ages of 13 to 25. 13 to 25, it's why? Because, you know, they're entering junior high, and they're into the high school, and they're going to college, mm-hmm. which, you know, the college, you know, has some sort of, you know, behaviors, and they party, and they do all this stuff.
They have a lot of freedom.
And they have a lot of freedom, so, you know, they put themselves, you know, out there, and they are a little, you know, they are easy prey for, you know, those who are just watching, and those who are have the sick mind to just, you know, be watching. So, you know, before 13 to 25, that's, you know, where we see a little bit more of the... Of the rapes.
The risk potential.
The risk.
So are there ways that people, you know, let's start with 13 to 25-year-olds, I guess. Are there ways that individuals of that age group can better manage themselves to put themselves at less risk?
Sure.
Without sacrificing their power, I mean, because, you know...
Education.
I should be able to wear a mini dress. Well,
exactly.
Not me, perhaps.
Thank you for catching that.
You would look really cute.
Yes. Thank you for touching that, you know, subject, because, like I said, you know, it shouldn't be a matter of, you know, I was wearing the skirt and that's why I get raped. You know, here in the Valley, it gets really hot. You know, most of the teenagers, they like to wear really short stuff, you know, short shorts. And that is not an invitation for anybody to get raped. I mean, there's not a sign that says, you know what.
The objectification of the female form could be topic for another show. And we could probably talk about that, because that's the whole other issue. Mm-hmm. But that being said, people should be allowed to present themselves, you know, within legal mm-hmm. limits of however they wish to.
However they wish to, and they have the freedom without being, you know, said, oh, I would like to, you know, walk around at 3 o'clock in the morning to walk my dog. But guess what? You know, we live here in El Centro, and what is the first thing that I want to watch out of for criminals, you mm-hmm. know, for us to get raped? So we would like to have the freedom to say, I mean, I'm not threatened by going out at 3 o'clock in the morning to walk my dog because I don't want to get raped.
So you mentioned times. Are there certain times where it's probably best to... You know, is it better to stay in a crowd of people? What, you know, what are the ways to do this?
Okay, well, you know, for you guys to be protected, you know, if we're talking about teenagers, if they go out to a party, never to drink anything that anybody gives them. If they're going to drink something, make sure that's close, you know, because we have instances where they put, you know, drugs into their drinks. So never take anything that anybody, I don't care if it's your friend, I mean, unless you really trust your friend, but remember, most of the rapes are by somebody you know, and that's acquaintance rape. So, you know, if it's a fellow member of, you know, of college, or, you know, your friend right next to that you see it on chemistry class, you know, they bring you a soda, you know, it's better to be a little bit discouraged and say, no, thank you. So don't take anything.
So be careful that other people don't dose you.
Exactly.
And don't never leave your drink.
Never leave your drink. Another one. Yeah, she remembers. Never leave your drink unattended. If you happen to go to the bathroom, take the drink with you. If you come back and it's, you know, it's still there, get another one.
Yeah.
Because, and that, it takes a split second for somebody to put a pill into your drink. And then, like I said, if you're not watching your drink, somebody else is. And, you know, I'm a perpetrator. I'm going to be watching what Maria's drinking, what she's doing. Oh, you know what? She's going to be gone. She's dancing with her friends. You know, it's the perfect time. And, you know, I'm going to put the little pill in there, and I'm just going to sit here and wait. How long does it take for her to pass out? When she passes out, then I'm going to make my move.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in high school and college, I mean, you didn't think about that. Nobody talked about that. Nobody gave you these prevention information. Now it's like, it's people, you know,
common operating procedure.
Exactly. You know, you always have to be aware of your surroundings and...
Exactly.
You know, what you're drinking, where your drink is.
And for people, this is the most, you know, time where they, you know, they're more... to get raped, you know, when there are partying. Also, you know, even if you're out, go to the store, you know, always be very surrounded. Don't be on a cell phone, you know, try to always have garb out. You know, most people
are looking hard. That's hard. You know, you look in the cars, people driving, everybody's texting or on the phone. And that's, you know, you're in line the grocery store and they're right there texting. They're in the movies
texting. With noise canceling earphones.
But that's when you become an easy target, you know, because, you know, you're not aware of your surroundings. So you're not watching what you're doing and you're not, you know, paying attention to where you're
at. Wait, I want to go back to dosing, though, because I think there's probably a corollary of the, you know, don't let other people dose you. And that probably would be don't dose yourself.
Exactly. Well, you know, if you're going to go out, never go out by yourself. Make sure. It's
a buddy system, huh?
Buddy system. But even with buddy systems, you know, I always tell, especially teenagers, you know, you cannot rely on your friends a lot because they're not going to be babysitting you. I mean, you have to take care of yourself. That's the main thing. And like I said, it's unfair that sometimes we don't get to enjoy to the fullest because we all always have to be aware of our surroundings. But yeah, you know what? Don't put yourself in a position where, you know, you can get hurt a lot faster. Like I said, it's not an invitation and it's not something that we want to actually say, you know, we don't want to let people know, you know, you're not allowed to have fun because you can get raped, you know, because it's unfair.
So life is like crossing the street without a crosswalk
all the time.
You've always got to be kind of keeping an eye out, make sure somebody will run you over.
Mm-hmm. And even if, you know,
it's kind of weird.
And also, you know, for those who they go to Mexicali, you know, and yeah, I said it doesn't happen here. Also over there, people sometimes they pay the bartenders to put stuff in their drinks. So even if, well, she's talking about not receiving anything from friends, but if the bartender gives it to me, you know, make sure that if they're going to get you a margarita or a piña colada, make sure you're there watching how they're mixing it. You know, it's, you might say, you know, she's paranoid and, but you know, it's better to be, safe than sorry. You know, mm-hmm. You never know.
That's another issue going, you know,
across the border.
Across the border.
And that's also one I wanted to mention. You know, unfortunately for those who have been sexually assaulted in Mexicali, there's nothing that we can do. We can still provide them with the emotional support.
You don't have a sister agency?
We have agencies that we can send them over there. However, you know, the legal system over there, it's way, way different. And for people who live over here, they're looking more for justice over here, and they don't.
What if it? Well, for example, what if it was, you know, a friend from high school from here, and was, you know, and she was raped over there from the friend. They're both from here, citizens of the United States.
So the crime occurs in another country, but the victim and the perpetrator, the survivor and the perpetrator,
and they come here and they get the evidence here.
But still, you know, since it happens in Mexicali, it belongs to a different jurisdiction. It happened. It's where it happened. The police, the law enforcement, actually have to, since they're the ones who pay for the exam, they actually have to see whose jurisdiction it belongs to. So even if the victim, you know, lives here in both the perpetrator and the victim, you know, since it happened in Mexicali, you know, it's nobody's jurisdiction. You know, they can still, you know, provide them with the supports, but they're still going to allegate. You know, sometimes, you know, they might make those exceptions, but say, you know, happen. But they said, where did it happen? You know, because who's going to take care of this case? I mean, even if you live in El Centro, will Centro, you know, take the case? Maybe, maybe not. And if it happens in Mexicali, it stays over there in Mexicali. So
that's something that women or the, you know, that as another prevention information is just, if you go to Mexicali,
yes,
be extra careful.
Extra careful. And not just so much because of the jurisdiction and because, you know, there's nothing you can do with it. Because, you know what, you're in a different country. They have different set of laws, you know, and, you know, it's a bigger city, especially when you're young, you know.
And they don't have sure helpline to.
And they don't have sure helpline.
And sexual assault response team.
Over there. But they do have it, you know, in their own way. But, you know, for us to be able to help them faster, you know, it's like I said, they can still call us. We can still provide them with some services, but not to the fullest or not to the whole extent as we will actually want to.
And let's go back to, I guess, in this whole probability soup that we're swimming in, let's go back to the fact that you mentioned earlier that the vast majority of sexual assaults are done by known perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, then your stranger danger, you know, while it's important to be aware of stranger danger kind of stuff, ultimately, your biggest concern needs to be the people that you're know and love.
And that's when it's also when it becomes tricky because, I mean, Scott, I would not believe that Scott will actually do anything. So I trust Scott. You know, I see Scott on a daily basis. So, you know, I don't have to have my guard up all the time versus to the ones that we have outside there, you know, the stranger rave, you know. Pretty much will be, I'm not going to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to be watching my surroundings. If I'm alone in the parking lot, I'm going to be watching out. Okay? But, you know, and also for the stranger rate, they, you know, they don't want to actually go ahead and attack you because you might fight back. So the least thing they want to do is to drag attention to them. So, I mean, chances of somebody actually fighting back and screaming, of course, you're going to turn around and say what's going on. So that will actually discourage a stranger to that versus to, you know, my acquaintance, right? You know, we're partying or we're watching a movie or, you know, we're, you know, drinking or whatever the situation might be. You know, my guard is not up because I know the person.
And so that's why. People's change. People change while they're under the influence.
Yes. You know, that's also something that, you know, people change, their personality changes.
Yeah, their behavior, everything changes.
Which is not an excuse.
Not an excuse.
But, yeah, you know, their personality changes. And they sometimes, well, I was drunk, I was under the influence, I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, they give those kind of excuses. So.
Okay, so it's like, so I'm back to my analogies here. So it's like being struck by lightning and large social gatherings with lots of alcohol, particularly in countries where the jurisdictional rules may be different, is kind of like there's like large dark clouds in the sky. So you're already doing this kind of risk thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so going out and partying in Mexicali, which is a lot of fun, and a lot of kids, I mean, it was kind of like a rite of passage, as far as I can tell, in Imperial Valley for years, and hopefully maybe less so now, but still clearly fairly popular. Carries with it its own special sets of risks.
Yes. Unfortunately, it does. You know, it's, but we're trying to, you know, it's like to say you want to have your cake and eat it too. You know, you want to have your freedom. If you want to be able to party, you want to be able to have fun. But at the same thing, you have to be smart enough to take care of yourself. When is it enough? When am I, you know, just to the point where I can't falling off? Or when am I to the point that somebody has to take care of me? You know, we don't want to get to that place. And for teenagers, it's hard to understand because they have this
mentality.
Nothing's going to happen.
It's a mentality, you know, they're made of plastic. Nothing's going to happen to them. You know, mighty powerful. You know, that only happens to stupid people. I'm the smart one. But, you know, don't be overconfident as far as, you know.
That's hard for them to.
It's hard. It's hard, especially when they have a lot of peer pressure. It's really hard, and that's what I say. You know, I tell them, you're not made of plastic, even though you believe so, and even if you believe that nothing is going to happen, you know, a lot of the incidents that we have, when they go in, they say, well, I never thought this would happen to me. You know, I thought I was in control. I say, you're never in control, especially when you're under the influence. You are never in control.
So managing your safety, though, becomes something that it sounds like something that we teach children, and then we continue to teach a different version, perhaps, for people who are beginning to be sexually active.
Exactly.
Basically.
And sometimes we also focus a lot of, you know, on females being, be careful. Don't do this. You know, don't wear this. You know, we're focusing a lot on the female.
Well,
but we also
be careful
have to,
as much as safety management.
Safety management. But we also have to, proactive. You know, teach our young men to be respectful. We have to teach them
the risk.
To empower them. Yes, to empower them. You know, to have respect towards women. You know, you don't disrespect, you know. But start teaching them. A lot of parents start doing, you know, they don't understand they're too young when they're 5, 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, I'm going to start when they're teenagers, you know.
It's too
at
late.
That time, it's too late. So you have to start since, you know, they're babies. They understand, you know, respect.
Do we have some sort of formula or process or curriculum for doing that, or is it hit and miss?
You know what? It's up to the parents.
I mean, because it sounds like probably most parents and most families would have that pretty much as an explicit goal, right? I mean,
sure.
You don't want your young man to grow up to be out of control. And,
exactly.
You know,
and usually, it, like I said, it's up to the discretion of each parent and also their beliefs and their cultural backgrounds and everything. But, you know, for those of you that are in there, they're still out in the dark, they don't know what to do, call us. You know, we have a lot of information that parenting techniques of how to, you know, start preparing your children, how to start, you know, accessing your children to the future. You know, we have a lot of information, so you guys are welcome to call us. And, you know, like I said, start since the beginning. Mm-hmm. A lot of parents don't know how to do it. Most parents have a little bit more of educational background, and they believe that's, you know, it's the way to go. But
there was There was a recent article in the local newspaper about our high rate of pregnancy among teenagers. It was very high.
Very high.
And I wonder, I mean, if any of those, you know, went unreported, you know, acquaintance. Rape or...
Yeah, you know, I would like to ask this too. And, you know, sometimes, like I said, they have a lot of pressure as teenagers. They, you know, sometimes they engage in sexual activity and they don't take care of themselves because most of the times it's something that happens really quick. They don't plan to have sex. It just happens. So, therefore, you know, they don't have the services, or sometimes they just don't have the knowledge, they don't have the protection, so that's why I end up. And they say, yeah, actually, they said that in the United States it's going down, but here in the Valley it's going up. So
it's going
I
up.
Said, obviously, whoever wrote this article, they've never been to Imperial, you know, to El Centro, because yes, I've seen a lot
and
of
I've been,
going up.
You know, working with kids, working with, not young, but teenagers, you know, the gangs that are going here, and sometimes the girls, you know, to be initiated, had to be...
The gang rape. And that is also rape. And that's one of the things that also becomes tricky, because even if they say, well, she authorized, she consent, because that was the initiation, it is still rape. Why? Because they are pressuring the person. Mm-hmm. The amount of pressure can sometimes drive that person to do stuff that they don't want to do. Especially
so consent
if,
with coercion is not consent.
It's not consent.
Exactly. So it's not consent. Even if she says yes, but, you know, you are coerced. You know, you are... push to do something, you know, well, you want to do
you
this.
You say yes or I'm going to beat you up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, either you do that or I'm going to beat you up. So exactly. In that position, so it's still rape. So for those who have been initiated, say, well, she said yes, you know, to all the 20 of us, you know, it's still rape. And we have that a lot, the gang rape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So.
I know for our listeners that are here in the Valley, yes.
Yes, it is. So that's why we have to, you know, be very careful with. And as far as consent, you know, what is consent? Yes. The word yes means, yes, I do want to. Mm-hmm. That is consent. And especially if you're not under the influence of alcohol, because if you're under the influence of alcohol, any sexual contact that you have, you cannot consent. So, I mean, if that person is under the influence of alcohol and the other person is, well, yeah, she said yes, yes. But you also have to take into consideration, was she under the influence? Yes. So, therefore, if I do it, it's rape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what is consent? When you hear the words, yes, I do, yes, I want to.
From a person capable of uttering those words.
Exactly.
Who are a person that is capable
mm-hmm. of actually, like I said, nobody who's under the influence of drugs and alcohol. So when they say, what is consent? When they hear yes. Mm-hmm. And does it sound goofy to ask? Yeah, it might. But, you know, it can also protect you from, you know, being a victim. It can protect you from being a perpetrator. So ask. You know, doesn't sound goofy? Is this what you want? If, you know, if I'm a man and say, you know what, are you sure, you know, is this what you want? Would you want to have sex? Like I said, it might sound goofy, it might sound mm-hmm. kind of dumb, but you know what, you're protecting yourself from becoming a perpetrator and you're becoming yourself from being a victim.
So, Mariana, if people have more questions that they want to ask, what is your number over this year, helpline?
760-352-7273, and we are open 24 hours a day, 7 days out of the week.
And if you say you heard about it on Let's Talk About It, they'll give you free stuff?
Well, sure.
Good
information.
A lot of free information.
Thanks for coming aboard today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And for those of you who are listening, thank you so much. And, you know, please stop at the office. And also, we are selling our resource manuals. And those are, you know,
those are really good.
Yes, the resource manuals are very helpful. And they are for a public. They're $30 and comes with a CD. So, you know, it's also a way of us getting fundings for victims of sexual assault. We buy clothes with that money. So, you know, feel free to stop.
Can we get autographed copies?
Sure.
Ooh.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Scott.
Have a safe weekend. And if you get a chance, go to up at the mountains. There's going to be more snow. So great time to take your kids. It'll be fun. And
an important announcement. Oh, here we go. Library Tax Service will waive the tax preparation fees for anybody who contributes a minimum of $30 to the American Cancer Society Relay for Life, which is a big deal. You've seen all the purple signs all over town. On Saturday, February 26th, which is this Saturday, hello, that's why I was supposed to read this, it will take place at 440 South 4th Street, El Centro, from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. So once again, Liberty Tax Service on 440 South 4th Street will do your taxes for free on Saturday from 9 to 9 for a $30 minimum donation to the American Cancer Society Relay for Life. So thank them for putting this on, and you know, thank you for listening and participating and showing up and having them do your taxes, because it'll benefit people who, speaking of life changers, you know, cancer is one of those things. Mm. All right, so everybody have a great weekend and
be safe
and
have fun.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.